Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com. accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast. I wanted to make sure that I released this podcast. This is a conversation I had with George Newberry from AHP Servicing, actually several weeks ago. And unfortunately, I just hadn't released it yet. And I want to make sure that this information gets out there sooner rather than later, because I know a number of people have been investing with George over the years. As you may or may not know, George is a guy I think a whole lot of. I think he is a very smart guy. And I think that the things that are happening with AHP, I'm convinced he's going to get over. I think everybody's going to land on their feet and he's going to go on and do some great things. So we're going to continue to follow him. But I want to make sure this podcast goes out to you. So I'm releasing this as a supplemental podcast this week. Check it out. He's giving us a little bit of not only background on what's going on with AHP, but also his perspective on real estate and, you know, the debt markets and all that kind of stuff. Good stuff. Check it out. Hopefully you have a little extra time this week to do that. So when we come back, George Newberry.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast is my good friend, George Newberry. George has been on the show so many times, I can't even count anymore. George, we're at something like 400 something episodes now, but George has been on like episode 2 or 3 when no one was listening. Then he was on, you know, probably in the 30s and then hundreds, 200s and so on and so forth. But the founder of multiple companies, including AHP, you tell me. So it was a debt cleanse. There was AHP.
Pre-REO. AHP, you know, servicing. You know,
AHP's.
And we started the American Home Enterprise Foundation. Then it kind of evolved as we saw, hey, here's a need. Here's an opportunity. And that's how this thing grew. And I mean, we started out really small. It was like 3 or 4 people in Cincinnati in 2008 and then grew from there.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what's going on, because you know, the story is basically for those people who've not invested with AHP, and I think it's useful. I mean, just in general to kind of talk about sort of the big things that happened. So you went from, you know, American homeowner, what was that?
Homeowner preservation.
Preservation to AHP. And then you eventually, the company got bigger and bigger. You had all sorts of other things going on and things were going well. What happened? The economy, what happened in the economy? Obviously, rates went up. And you are in the business of debt, buying debt.
We are, and sometimes taking on debt. And that was probably, something that was helpful for years, but in the end has not been helpful. So go back, you know, where you start 2008, we started HP in order to help families at risk of foreclosure stay in their homes. And we had thousands of families come to us. We tried to advocate on their behalf with their lenders and servicers, and we didn't have much success. Many of the servicers and lenders were inefficient and ill-equipped to provide solutions that help families stay in their homes. So we said, hey, we pivoted and we started buying the defaulted mortgages, which was a much better process. And that was the pivot that succeeded. We ended up buying more than 10,000 defaulted mortgages in the last decade. We kept thousands of families in their homes. As a result, we'd buy these loans at discounts. We'd share the discounts with the families, and that worked. Now, one of the challenges is that when you're in order to work with a family to resolve their mortgage, you need to typically have a license. So we had to work with servicers who would be the ones with the license who would actually work out the deals with the families. And that was something where we had to quarterback them. Okay, this is what we want to do. And many times what we were doing was different than what most of their other clients wanted. We wanted to a consent, fast consensual resolution. And so that's what we did. So, and it worked really well. I mean, we started out in 2010. By 2011, we moved to Chicago. We started a fund, and there was so much supply of defaulted mortgages that the pricing was very attractive, and we were able to buy these and generate great impact on the families whose loans we bought as well.
And what year was that now, George? What?
We moved to Chicago in 2011.
Okay. That was right around when I met you.
Yeah, it was right around. Because we were in Cincinnati from 2008 to 2011, mid 2011. I think we moved around Halloween, so right around now.
Yeah,
In 2011, and then we started growing here, and it grew well. And again, a lot of supply. We buy most of the big Wall Street hedge funds didn't want the loans in the low and moderate income neighborhoods. They, you know, you could make $5,000 or $10,000 on a time, but we did a high volume, so it worked out really well. But then the market 2016, 17, it started getting less and less mortgages available. So we came up with a strategy, which probably was a good one, but you know, didn't work out as hoped. Is, hey, in anticipation of the next downturn, let's build our own servicer, AHP Servicing, a national mortgage servicer. Now we don't have to quarterback others. We can execute these resolutions to help families and our clients and investors, and we'll do that. And you know, now we started that in 2017. We were officially opened as a servicer in 2018.
And just so that people have an idea, can you just define exactly kind of what a servicer does?
Sure. Yeah. So a servicer, most commonly, and most of us will know, a servicer is the person that we pay our mortgage to. And a servicer, in most of the time, is simply going to collect payments from the homeowner, take out a small fee, make sure the taxes and insurance are paid, and then remit the difference to the investor. That's the basic services of a servicer. But the when a homeowner becomes delinquent, then it entails a lot of other things, you know, potentially starting a foreclosure, working out, you know, modification or deed in lieu or short payoff or short sale. Potentially the homeowner files bankruptcy. Now you need to file a claim. And so there's a lot of extra activity when a homeowner becomes delinquent. There's also a lot of extra compliance and regulation that needs to be followed. So those are the functions. And we said, let's build this, and we'll by the time we get it done, we will be ready for the next downturn. There'll be a big downturn, you know, and you look back at history, and history will show expansion and contraction. That's helpful. You know, the market there's, you know, things go real estate market, the easy ways that things go up and they go down, they go up, they go down. But you know, by 2019, we were on the tail end of the longest economic expansion in our country's history. And when COVID hit, we thought, okay, this is the trigger. This is what's going to trigger the next downturn and the next, demand for our servicing business. There'll be a lot of defaulted mortgages for us to buy. Other people will buy. They'll ask us to service, but that didn't happen. As we all know, you know, the market became extremely hot during COVID, and also foreclosures were put on hold. You know, there are moratoriums across the country, and so our business, you know, we thought, okay, well, you know, eventually COVID ends and then there'll be a big wave of default. And we ended up with, you know, COVID went on for a period of time. And when it ended, I think everybody in the industry predicted 6 months later, there's going to be just a ton of foreclosures, but it's not happened. I mean, here we are 2023 and we're still waiting on this wave of default, and it's having, you know, it's good, I guess, that families aren't struggling. But, you know, for those in the business that are working to serve that industry, it's become, there just wasn't much demand. And it's not just us. You know, I talked to people at Hubzu. They've had massive layoffs, auction.com layoffs. It's something a lot of the foreclosure law firms, layoffs, consolidations, going out of business, servicers. There's been some big servicers that have consolidated to kind of keep, you know, because the default servicing that we were going to focus on just wasn't, there wasn't much demand. And because there wasn't as many people in default, and, you know, many of you, of your listeners, probably real estate investors, there haven't been anywhere near the volume of REOs that we'd see historically. And
why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
Well, all those government programs, you know, government assistance during COVID certainly kicked it down, but you would kick the time frame, kick the can down the road, to use a cliche. And but then COVID ended, the foreclosure moratoriums lifted, and then but then there were some homeowner assistance programs put into place, some funds that went through the different state agencies, and that was okay. Well, now these families coming off forbearance, let's pump some money and keep them in there longer. And that's happened. That most of those programs have wound down just in the last couple of weeks, at the end of October. And so now, you know, there's a potential for more default. But the other part that's really changed is the real estate market has remained hot. And so people who get into trouble simply sell their homes, and they can walk away, pay off the mortgage, and walk away with cash. And that's, you know, a lot of people since pre-COVID to now still have significant equity, you know, that was is now in their home. So that's, you know, it's just all combined to make the business plan that we established for AHP servicing. Hey, it wasn't working. We weren't getting the volume that we needed. And we built less than a year ago, we had the technology used by the biggest servicers in the country. We still have it. We had built a team that came from some of the largest servicers in the country. So we built just this awesome team, awesome technology, awesome systems. And but all that comes at a cost. So awesome overhead.
Yeah. So basically you anticipated a big business opportunity, because you saw which way this economy was headed. You got all ready and it kind of didn't happen. It was almost like getting ready for a party and then the party didn't happen, right? Basically, yeah. That's what happened.
Rent the tuxedo and you're all right, ready to go, and oh, it's not there.
Yeah.
Nothing happening. That's
so tough. I guess there's a couple of questions. I mean, first of all, I think just for people, I mean, I know you just have done a webinar on this too. But I want to kind of dive into first your, you know, specifically with what's happening with your company and what, you know, what resolutions there have been. I should preface this by saying that, you know, I've gotten a lot of, you know, a lot of people who are listeners of this show are investors in AHP, and I was an investor in AHP for many years too. And so there was lots of concern. I think a lot of that concern is ultimately because, you know, when we were talking about this, when the tide goes out, you find out who's swimming naked, and it's not only there's different kinds of things that people are finding out in this space. There was some fraudulent activity, and there was also the reality of the economy, which is in real estate. I mean, regardless of what it, you know, the job numbers show, whatever growth in GDP, real estate is getting hammered. And so people are experiencing that as well. But I always told people, George is going to do whatever he can to make sure that, you know, you're made whole. I mean, all you have to do is read his book. And if he made those, you know, stinking banks whole, he's going to do his best to make you whole too. So I have confidence in that, but I wanted to kind of get the story in terms of where you are with the business, what the plan is, and the path forward.
Yeah. So that is, I tried everything to make that servicer work. And we're still in business as a servicer, but we've now, in the end, it became increasingly apparent that this isn't going to play out. And we explored a sale to another company. They had trouble. And these were executives that were coming out of Ally Bank and Redfin Mortgage, and they couldn't raise money to buy it. And they just, the environment, it's so different today than it was 2 years ago, where money was like flowing to any opportunity. Here, it's tough to raise money. It's what really made it challenging was that we had taken on some debt, and we had debt since 2015 in different funds. And we had the debt and we bought assets, and then we pay it down, and, you know, it would go up and down. But last year, we in August, so August 2022, the lender said they couldn't renew it. And they had, you know, we were with the same lender for 7 years and never missed a payment. And they said, hey, we need our money back. And it was $25 million. And so we had, so we didn't have it. And we tried to sell loans. We did try to do a big loan sale at the end of 2022, but this is right when the interest rates were going up. And so, yeah, you know, interest rates go up, the value of our loans goes down. And that impeded a resolution. We got back the bids and they were like, oh, this isn't going to work. So we rejected them and moved forward. But meanwhile, we had this debt. And so we had to start paying big, big pay downs. And in fact, just recently, over the last 2 weeks, we paid that debt off in full. And it started out, you know, a year ago, it was $25 million, started out the year at $19.75 million. And now it's paid off, which is great.
And when did you pay that off?
About 2 weeks ago. So
Just like a big asset sale then, or what?
No. The big asset sales have been tough. 2 years ago, big asset sales did really well. In the rising interest rate environment, the best way to optimize the recovery from our holdings has been to get the asset to REO. So now we're selling, instead of selling a whole bunch of loans to another fund who's trying to buy it at a discount, if we can foreclose on an asset, get a deed in lieu, or anything like that, then we can put it on the market. And the real estate market has remained, even with the interest rate increases, has remained remarkably healthy. So we get an REO, people buy it, and they buy them at strong pricing. So that's been great for us. But right now, that was a big component of paying off that debt, was getting things to REO. And once we got the debt paid off, then we were, the lender actually has been overpaid. And so we're waiting on some cash to come back and the remaining assets to be released. They haven't done that yet. It's been a couple of weeks. You know, that for them, that may be normal time frame. For us, it's just where we are we really need that to be completed. And in fact, we had a loan sale to complete at about $2.5 million. As soon as we get these assets released, but it's been delayed. So we are financially right now, it's been tough this whole year. It's particularly tough right now because we kind of financially drained ourselves repaying this debt. And now we are at the point where we need to sell additional assets and get some cash in for operations. Now, our operations have shrunk dramatically. We're down, it feels like back in Cincinnati, we have about 7 people now. In a couple of weeks, we'll be down to 5 people. Mm-hmm. And so it's really shrunk. But the good news is that the overhead has really shrunk. So the more the dollars that come in today, you know, we can start, we can maximize the amount that go back to investors, which is what I'm looking forward to doing.
Yeah. So for investors who are, you know, who've got some stuff invested, they haven't who had some concerns, what's the outlook on their principal and interest? What's the plan there?
Yeah, so we expect to shortly have these assets freed up, and then we will be able to some REO sales. We just signed some documents on those, so we should have some money coming in over the next couple of weeks, which will enable us to restart distributions. The goal is to catch up on distributions and then move to redemptions. And the goal is, you know, I'm dead set on getting everyone paid back. I'll do everything I can to make sure that happens. People made these investments based on, you know, believing in me, believing in the story and HP's mission. And I want that trust and that belief, I want to fulfill that and get everyone their money back. And you know, it isn't just me saying, here, I'm going to pay everyone's money back. What we've done with the companies, and this is something as an entrepreneur, maybe I wasn't, we didn't come naturally. So 2 years ago, and ever all the time before that, I would always say, oh, well, let's do this. Let's build a national mortgage servicer. Then let's build a national title company. And we can do it ourselves. We don't need to do it with anyone else. At this point, we can't. We are, we've been hampered. But what is good is we came up with some innovative solutions, technology, strategies that are helpful to others. And many times they have other things that we need, more capital, better established. So what we've done is on the servicer, we've entered into two alliances. One is with a company called Capital Mortgage Services, and another is with a company called Prevo Corp. They're both kind of taking, we moved some employees to Capital Mortgage Services. We moved our technology there. And we are working on a joint venture with them where we've actually bought some loans together using their money and credit. And now the people we moved over are focusing on resolving their defaulted assets and doing them. And I think an eye-popping rate they're really... they didn't have as much default experience. That's what we bought and our strategies. And I think they're really happy with the progress that we're making on their defaulted portfolio and on the acquisitions that we've made. So I think that's going to blossom. They have the ability to service government loans, FHA, VA, USDA, Fannie and Freddie. And so that also gives us an avenue, something we didn't have. We were too young to get those approvals. So now that we teamed up with them, though, we can work those loans. So that's been good. You know, the Prevo Corp is a company that supports a lot of the bigger mortgage servicers and originators in this company. They need a licensed entity to provide some of their service to expand their services. So they teamed up with us because we had licenses in 49 states to service and originate. And that's been really helpful to them. So we have both of those are in motion. They're already working and we expect to start seeing some decent revenue from both of them. And now revenue comes in and we only have a handful of people on our team. So we can maximize the amount of money that goes to investors, both from the asset sales and other dispositions, as well as the revenue from the operations. And similar things with the title company and Priario. We're partnering with better capitalized, more established companies who can help us get through this period, because this period is, I read something about a year ago where it was saying for the next couple of years, 2023 and 2024, massive shakeout, a lot of companies are going to fail. And it's to survive to 2025. And those that can survive, there'll be big opportunities in 2025. But there's a massive thinning of the herd going on right now. A lot of companies have gone out of business. So we are... we've had taken some blows, but we're getting to the point where we've reduced our costs, and we have, forged alliances with some partners where we think we can get to a good place with everything, get all investors paid off and then move on and run these businesses.
There, that I was laughing when you said survive to 25, because I don't know how many times I've heard that and how many times I've said that at this point. But I think, you know, I was also talking to somebody yesterday, major real estate operator. And I think that was, again, the idea is that, you know, if you've got assets that you can potentially hang on to right now and not lose them, hold on to them, because it is like the absolute worst time to sell them. And then right around the corner, not around the corner, but like in a year or so, there's just so much pent up demand, so much money that's projected to go into these assets that it's probably going to drive these prices way up again. So, you know, losing these assets or selling right now is a very bad idea. And that's a challenge, because In times like now, people a lot of times want to throw in the towel, right? And say, hey, you know, maybe there's a, they're experiencing cash calls, and certainly, you know, that is happening left and right in syndicated real estate. It is everywhere. And understanding that there is a value in that just for survival for the next 18 months is so incredibly important, right? And then people aren't, I think, kind of processing that. And those who do will do well in 2025 if they can actually suck it up and hold on. I think that that's the idea.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I look at companies that have filed for bankruptcy. Some of our peers in the crowdfunding space have filed for bankruptcy, and look at that and say, God, they could. I mean, sometimes I walk into work and I know, you know, how are we gonna make payroll? What are we gonna do? And we find ways to get through the day. And so there's definitely days where it's very uncomfortable. And so I get that from other people running their businesses, but they can but if you can do what's necessary, downsize employees, meet with, you know, we've had a couple of times we've had to pay all the frontline employees, but then the more management senior employees, hey, it's going to be a couple of days, and people generally understand. And then you honor that but get through those trying days. To file for bankruptcy to me is, you know, I've never done it, never want to do it. It's kind of like, you know, it's failed. You're just basically saying it failed, whatever the strategy was. And to some extent, we've had some, you know, failure here at with the servicing operation. But the but God, what can you do to get through that period and endure it? And to your point, get to the other side, because there is another side. You may have to do what we've done, which is go down to what's going to be five employees in a couple of weeks and get to you know, cut costs, delay paying vendors, pause distributions. That's very uncomfortable. You know, tell investors, hey, you know, you've been used to us paying distributions for the last, 10, 11, 12 years. And now all of a sudden we're stopping. And people just, it was something where things have changed. But I'm intent on finding a way through it. I think if we do this the strategic partnerships, I mean, now I kick myself because I should have done some of these 2 years ago, because it's much easier. And I didn't have to incur the overhead and whatnot, but you know, you learn.
Yeah. From,
you know, the challenges.
Well, along that lines, I was going to ask you, because I think, you know, as a sort of a fellow bootstrap entrepreneur, like you, you know, I've had some of these situations throughout my life where, you know, it was like, it was going to happen. Everything was really going great. And then boom, something didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, I look back and try to think, well, okay, what could I have done differently? Or what will I do differently? And what have I learned from this? It seems very basic, but when you look back and the steps that you took, you know, obviously there was a good reason for what you did. But if you go back, like what do you think you would have done differently, or what were you reading wrong?
Yeah, I think anything? I was reading it right that there was going to be a downturn. It's COVID, I think, was a outlier.
The money,
none of us expected. Yeah, all the infusion of cash, things became very distorted during COVID. Now, on the positive side, we exited a lot of our positions. We sold a lot of loans during COVID. Especially the tail end of COVID at really high premiums over what we paid, a record high. In late 2021, we sold some assets and had unheard of pricing that we've never seen since, never seen before. And that was great. But I mean, the problem is our overhead was so high that those gains, you know, largely subsidized the servicing operations. So that wasn't, which was always money losing. And that was, that was a challenge. I'd have probably started the servicer, done it, but not have this vision of being a huge national servicer right off the bat. Maybe start with some states and kind of grow it a little more, slowly, and not take on the overhead. The overhead was really too high, and I focus. You know, I did. I'll tell you this. I haven't told anyone else because I just put the two together. But a friend of mine owns a company called Book in the Box. Now it's called Scribe, or Scribe Media. Mm-hmm. And he had, in 2017, he wrote a post saying he had bootstrapped his company, Book in the Box, and had it had become profitable and successful. And I was one of the clients. I was one of his first clients. And he put on there, but it's now is the time. He says, I can't run this business. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm handing it over to a CEO. So he hired this CEO. Yeah. And I remember reading that post and saying, that's what I should do. Because everything about him is the same as me. And so I hired the CEO, and it ended up,
it was a disaster, George. It was a disaster.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
And the HP was not the same without you calling the shots. You were the magic. And that is one of the things I think in the entrepreneurial world that's very, very difficult is this happened to me with, my cosmetic surgery offices in Chicago. I mean, yep. They were, there it was massively profitable when I was there, and it's just been, just not the same. It's not made any money. And so that is a hell of a challenge to try to bring whatever intangible skill set or, magic that you bring along with you. And try to outsource that. Right. But on the other hand, I don't know that I would say in your case that was something that you would have anticipated. That's what companies do when they get big. And that's what you're supposed to do. Right. So.
Yeah. Agreed. But it wasn't it didn't work out as planned. A year and a half later, I was back in the CEO role, and there were some missteps during that period, which, I was able to largely realign the ship, but it was, and then COVID hit and all kinds of other circumstances. But just in the last few days, I received a notice that Scribe Media had filed for bankruptcy.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. So I was sorry to hear that, because he had built a successful business, handed it off to a CEO, and then a few years later it was gone, and the business was bankrupt. And so that's that was unfortunate, and luckily we've avoided that. But it has been, we've very successful. I mean, you remember our returns in like 2016, 2017, were like 38% in for the year, 40% for the year. The returns were incredible, and then that was me and a support, kind of like I'm down to now, just me and a small support team, working these assets. Then we tried to become a big company. First year, the returns went to the single digits, and we've never been the same since. And so right now, and then we had this big organization and there's all this overhead, and we made a lot of money on the assets that we bought in the first 6 months of COVID. Turned out to be great buys, have very successful, but we ended up, that money just kind of got absorbed into the servicing operations. So
what do you do going forward if you know that the magic is in the small, and that your greatest success is the fact that you are very skilled when it comes to the hands-on part of this? So what do you do with that? I mean, do you keep doing
it? I can't, but that means that I'd work till I'm dead, and that's not the plan. I mean, I like working. I think you like working. We both enjoy it, but it's not one. This period is kind of tough. But
yeah. So what do you do?
So here's my theory now, because I can't be part of I'm not great at running day-to-day operations.
I'll concede that.
And that's probably the worst part, and handling employees
terrible,
especially as we had we got to a lot of employees. So I think the solution may be what we're doing now. I mean, we I'll give you an example. AHP Title, we purchased a title insurance company. I think in the end that's going to be one of our best deals ever, and it's now another company has bought 50% interest in it, and they are a much larger company that they had previously built a national title agency and had sold it for in the hundreds of millions. And now they've waited out their non-competes, and now they're doing it again with the same team. And they have significant traction, but they needed an underwriter, and we had one. And what's some states won't let you be an underwriter in their state unless you've been in business for 10 years. So our underwriter that we bought has been in business since the 70s. So we had what's a fairly rare commodity, and we are not commodity, but rare situation, title underwriter and in business for more than 10 years. So that's what they were looking for. They came to us. We want to be partners 50-50. And now they bought in yet another title insurer to be part of it. And they're, I see that having massive growth in AHP title. But I have no employees. It's just me. And they run the operations. They have all the people. And we're simply, the 50% owner. So those strategic partnerships, even on the servicer, you know, the CMS Alliance, the Prevo Alliance, we just need a couple people here to support it. It's not a big, so it's me. But then there's a big operation, but somebody else is running those operations because that has been a struggle. I haven't done well at it. And, I think that's probably the same for you. You and a small team,
yeah,
that works. It starts getting really big and there's a layer of management below you. Make that work. It's not me.
I mean, we don't usually talk about these sort of entrepreneurial things on the show, but I think, it's worth talking about because, you know, we have some of the similar challenges. But what I found that it's really hard to do, but yet very, very important, is to stay in your lane. In other words, like, there ultimately you have a power, a superpower, you're something you're really, really good at. But you want to get bigger. It doesn't mean that you continue that you have to do it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you just need to do is you need to find the pieces or the partners, in my opinion, that can do, who are really good at the other parts of what you need to have done. And then, you know, pari passu, you're part of that business that you're really good at, can grow exponentially because that's just what you're really good at. That's kind of like what I've realized. And like you, like, I'm a horrible, like, you know, management person. I am not a management person at all. I'm a big vision thinker. You know, I have ideas. I can look at things and I'm a deal maker, but I'm not a guy on the ground at all. And I'm not, you know, the one who's going to sit there and manage, you know, like you said, 50 employees, 100 employees, whatever it ends up, because it ends up being an absolute circus. Mm. That is a real challenge, though. You have to figure out like what you're good at and figure out how you're going to just not do anything else but what you're good at. So,
yeah, and avoid the distractions that come with it and do the stuff that's. The stuff that we're probably both good at is the stuff we like. And,
yeah, right.
And the stuff that's
right.
Fun to do. It's not even feeling like work. But yeah, this other stuff, oh my goodness, it becomes a huge distraction, a huge drain. And then you're not even spending the time on the stuff that you're good at. And as a result, we had a business that became challenged. I mean, entering these, I love doing these partnerships. I think I should have done it before. I'm also, I guess, in a way, the CEOs, you bring in a CEO, you give them equity, you give them a big salary, and they come in and you think, okay, you know, they have some equity, they want to build it, but God, I haven't had that experience yet.
Yeah.
Where people, they're really there. They get a nice cushy salary and they're there, you know, kind of, not like you want it. And
yeah.
And now if you have a partner who's not making any salary, but they're just in there with you and they're trying to grow something, the interests become much more aligned, and that's
exactly
what I'm experiencing. And
100%.
So it's been, but I'm 50. I just turned 58 3 days ago, so I'm not. Thank you. It's good to learn lessons, but you're not. You know, 58. You'll keep learning till the end of life. But we. This last couple of years has been really tough. This last year has been just ridiculously tough and challenging. And I have two twin 3-year old boys at home.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, trying to balance work and the kids. And I was hoping, you know, hiring all these people, putting everything into place, that I get to a point where, okay, I'm, you know, other people are really running the business and not me. But I guess maybe that's not how it played out. And
right.
I guess when you left Chicago, probably the same thing. Oh, you have the right people in place. You think they'll.
Well, you think so, and then bang,
Yeah,
it just falls apart. So, But anyway, yeah, well, thanks. You know, let me ask you this before we cut out. You're seeing and hearing a lot from big institutional players in real estate. You're hearing from economists just like I am. You've talked about, you know, staying alive till 25 and all that stuff. I mean, what are you seeing in 24? What's going to happen? What do you see? I mean, obviously, it's, you know, none of us really can predict the future, but what's your take on 2024?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I've been a terrible, I think I used to be pretty good at reading, you know, because historically, from an economic perspective, you can look at history and usually predict the future to some extent.
Yeah.
And historically, there's this, you can go back through the last 100 years and keep going back even further, and you'll see that there's an economic expansion, contraction, expansion, contraction. The question is, how big is the expansion? How big is the contraction? Yeah. And that's how the economy is run. Yeah. But it's been, I think the pandemic really distorted things. The expansion became the biggest expansion on our country's history. And even the contraction, if we're saying, I don't even know we're in the contraction yet, because for the last 2 years, I've continued to say 6 months, you really see things start turning the other way. And I've been wrong constantly. And so right now, I don't even know if in 6 months in 2024, if this market is going to really turn. The real estate market, still pretty strong. Interest rates are high. There's not much activity, but there's not much activity in terms of buying because there's not much inventory.
And there's also, you know, the interest rates are high, but the job market is very strong, which is strange because as you know, your company's laying off people, I'm seeing large companies lay off people left and right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, how in the world is the job market strong and GDP is 5%? It just doesn't make any sense. Zero. Makes zero sense. It's the, I think, there, who's that? The Naomi Prince, maybe? She wrote the book, The Great Distortion. And basically it was the idea that, you know, all of this financial engineering from the Fed and government policy and stuff has basically made all of, you know, the cycles and the concepts that we rely on to predict things completely almost sort of useless right now. When you pump in that kind of money, it does weird things. It's like, it's on psychedelics.
It's a mutation. We have an economic mutation on our hands. Right. So you can't predict what where the mutation is going to go. It is. It's extraordinary makes things highly unpredictable. And that's not good for business when you're trying to forecast, hey, what's going to happen in the next 6 months? But I think, I mean, at some point, well, you would have to think at some point it normalizes. It still doesn't feel anywhere near normal though. And when it normalizes, you know, we'll see where the opportunities are. But in the meantime, it's survival get to 2025. Hopefully there'll be big opportunities and the people that do make it there will have big success. But it's going to be a challenge between now and then. I think for a lot of people, we'll continue to see businesses fail. Even post-COVID, I mean, I'm in downtown Chicago. I don't know how recently you've been back, but there are stores, restaurants, left and right boarded up, closed, for lease signs everywhere. I'm in a building downtown, Chicago Stock Exchange building. There, I don't know what the occupancy, I'm guessing it's 50%. I can tell you on our floor, the 11th floor, we're the only tenant still here. Everybody else is gone.
It's crazy.
It's just insane. How things have changed so dramatically since COVID and how much, you know, Chicago's changed. I think many other cities have changed dramatically jobs that, you know, people had small businesses for years. That's what they did. And now those businesses are just wiped out. And what are those people doing? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it was great chatting with you, George, as always. And best of luck to you. And I'm sure you'll be on again and again and again.
I look forward to it. I want to keep my record. I think I'm still the leader.
Oh, I think you are by far still. Thanks for being on. We'll catch up soon again.
All right. Good to chat again, Bug. We'll thanks right, for having me on.
We'll be right back.
Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3 and a half years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. And just a reminder, if you're looking for more Buck and you don't care what it's all about, if you're interested in just listening to another podcast that I'm doing and you happen to want to live a little bit longer, check out my other podcast, Sapio with Buck Joffrey, releases Monday and Wednesday, and lots of great information in there. And if you haven't, download the book, Living Longer for Busy People, at sapiopodcast.com. That's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.